It's time for justice. Welcome to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. on 97.3 FM WRIR and online at www.rir.org. I'm your host, Marty Wegebright. This show is written and produced by Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. We give free, civil, non-criminal legal aid to low-income people in Richmond, Petersburg, Charlottesville, and surrounding cities and counties. Coming up on this week's show...
Well, our main concern is that in drawing up this lease, no one really seems to have given much thought to the park's public forum status and to how the park will continue to be used for the purpose of free speech. So the lease doesn't say anything about what policies are going to govern holding a rally in the park, leafleting in the park, or any kind of speech in the park. The lease is just silent on this point. And so the lease does provide that Monroe Park Conservancy is supposed to come up with use policies for the park, doesn't impose many requirements about what those use policies should say. And so it's very important that when those use policies are developed, that we all examine them carefully to make sure that First Amendment rights will be observed.
Rebecca Glenberg, attorney for the American Civil Liberties Union of Virginia, talks about the law of free speech, public forums, and their concerns that the 30-year lease between the city and the Monroe Park Conservancy does not contain explicit provisions for free speech in the park. And during this week's News You Can Use, you'll learn about efforts to prohibit the Justice Department from spending money on Operation Choke Point, a crackdown on banks that facilitate illegal activity and payment fraud, and why that money should continue to be spent. All that and more coming up. Stay with us. The show is supported in part by a grant from the Virginia Law Foundation. This show, number 242, is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society and gives only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford an attorney, we'll tell you later in the show how to get free legal advice or representation in a civil case. The Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show is heard every Wednesday at 12:30 on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio, and online at www.rir.org, and is made possible by community radio volunteers at WRIR. And now, this week's News You Can Use. Americans for Financial Reform, a coalition of community, consumer, civil rights, and labor groups, are urging Congress to support efforts to ensure that banks and payment processors comply with long-standing due diligence requirements so they can avoid facilitating illegal activity. The coalition opposes any effort to block funding for the Department of Justice's Operation Choke Point or to weaken other regulator efforts to fight payment fraud. Many scams, frauds, and illegal activity could not occur without access to the payment system. Banks and payment processors that originate payments play a critical role in enabling wrongdoers to debit victims' bank accounts and to move money around. The FBI estimates that mass marketing fraud causes tens of billions of dollars of losses each year from millions of individuals and businesses, and one recent study found that fraud drains $2.9 billion a year from the savings of senior citizens. In addition, the data obtained in breaches like the recent Targets, Michaels, and P.F. Chang breaches would be useless without a bank to use that data to debit bank or credit card accounts. Originating banks are not always aware that they are being used to facilitate illegal activity. But if and when they choose to continue to profit from lines of business in the face of blatant signs of illegality, they become an appropriate target for enforcement action. If regulators do not take action against banks or payment processors facilitating illegal payments, they are left playing an impossible game of whack-a-mole, which makes it much too easy for fraudsters to get away with continuing to break the law, and processing institutions to continue to benefit from law-breaking. Operation Chokepoint is aimed at banks that choose to process transactions even though they know the transactions are fraudulent or willfully ignore clear evidence of fraud. It is irresponsible and dangerous to halt scrutiny of banks and payment processors that close their eyes when they operate in areas with a high risk of illegality. There are thousands of banks in this country and plenty that will continue to handle high-risk but lawful accounts. But the tens of billions of dollars that Americans lose to fraud every year and the harms permitted by money laundering are just too great to abandon all vigilance by banks and payment processors that are in a position to stop illegal activity. Fighting payment fraud should not be controversial. Everyone benefits from efforts to stop illegal activity that relies on the payment system. With this week's News You Can Use, this is your host, Marty Wegbright. Welcome back to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio. We're here at the American Civil Liberties Union of Virginia, and we are speaking with Rebecca Glenberg, the legal director of the ACLU of Virginia. And we will be talking about the law governing public forums, and in particular, the recent Monroe Park controversy, where the City of Richmond City Council has leased Monroe Park to the Monroe Park Conservancy for a period of 30 years, and there are questions about the access of the public to what has traditionally been a public forum. Welcome to the show, Rebecca.
Thanks so much. I'm glad to be here.
We're glad to have you back. Now, the last time we had you on the show was about 2.5 years ago, right around the time of the Occupy Wall Street, Occupy Richmond events, when a number of protesters were occupying Canal Plaza for a matter of weeks until the police cleared them out. So can you refresh our memories? What is the law in general about the use of public forums from a constitutional viewpoint?
Well, the Supreme Court has recognized that there are certain areas, certain kinds of government property that have always been used as a forum for free speech. And traditionally, these spaces include public parks, public sidewalks, public streets. They often include the plazas around government buildings or grassy areas around courthouses. And what the Supreme Court has said is that from time immemorial, we have recognized that these are places that members of the public gather to talk about the events of the day and to express themselves to their government officials. So the Supreme Court has said that government's power to restrict speech in those traditional public forums is limited. And in fact, your right to free speech in a public forum is greater than any other government property.
And so what type of restrictions can be imposed by a government, if any, on the right of free speech, and I gather free assembly as well, in what has traditionally been recognized as a public forum?
Well, the Supreme Court has given us a bit of guidance about how speech may be regulated in a public forum. First of all, any regulations need to be content neutral, which means that they don't distinguish between different types of speech based on what the person is actually saying. So you couldn't have a rule that says you can talk about what movie came out last week in the public park, but you can't talk about what books you're reading. And you can't have a law that says Republicans can have a meeting in the park, but Democrats can't. So rules need to, on their face, be content neutral and not draw those kinds of distinctions. The kinds of rules that the government can make are what they call time, place, and manner restrictions. So the government can restrict when you're allowed to speak. So, for example, they can impose restrictions that prohibit very loud speech during times when people are asleep. They can restrict the place of speech, and they can restrict the manner of speech. So, again, something like whether sound amplification is used, whether there are really big signs with poles that could poke someone's eyes. Those are things that have to do with the manner of speech. So the government can restrict time, place, and manner, but those restrictions have to be reasonable, the Supreme Court has said. So you can't have a time restriction that says the public park can only be used a half an hour a day for speech, for example. The time, place, and manner restrictions have to be reasonable, and they have to have a relationship to a permissible government objection. So they can't just be created on a whim. They have to be there because it's necessary to protect public safety or to protect the peace and quiet of residents nearby. It has to be some connection between the restriction and what the government is trying to achieve.
Okay, that seems like a pretty comprehensive set of rules that would govern the reasonable time, place, and manner of speech in a public forum. Let's shift to the current situation with Monroe Park. Exactly what is it that the city council is doing with Monroe Park?
Well, Monroe Park has been leased to a private organization, the Monroe Park Conservancy, for a period of 30 years. And the Monroe Park Conservancy is supposed to pretty much run the park and make various improvements to the park during the time that it's in their control.
And what exactly is the Monroe Park Conservancy? Are they a nonprofit organization? Who's on it? Have they been around for years, or have they just been recently formed? What do we know about these folks?
What I know is that they are a private non-government organization.
And as a private non-government organization, aren't they still carrying out some type of government action? In other words, aren't they state actors?
Absolutely, because Monroe Park remains a public park. And it remains a traditional public forum, as we discussed. And therefore, the Monroe Park Conservancy's actions in regulating conduct in the park are considered to be state actions.
And what do we mean by state action exactly?
Right. So our Constitution, and particularly the First Amendment in this case, limits what government can do. It generally doesn't limit what private individuals can do. So whereas the government can only restrict speech in public parks very narrowly, as we discussed, I can restrict speech however I want in my own house. And so could a private shop owner, for example. But the government is limited by the First Amendment. But when a private entity is taking over government functions, very often the law considers that private entity to be a state actor. And what that means is that that entity is then limited by the Constitution in the same way that the city is.
So essentially, there's no difference between what the Monroe Park Conservancy wants to do with Monroe Park or what City Council would want to do with Monroe Park. If I understand you correctly, you're saying the law would be the same.
Exactly, yes. The Monroe Park Conservancy has to observe the same constitutional rights that apply when the City of Richmond is running the park.
So what are the concerns of the American Civil Liberties Union of Virginia that you have addressed to the City Council and in particular to the City Attorney about this arrangement?
Well, our main concern is that in drawing up this lease, no one really seems to have given much thought to the park's public forum status and to how the park will continue to be used for the purpose of free speech. So the lease doesn't say anything about what policies are going to govern holding a rally in the park, leafleting in the park, or any kind of speech in the park. The lease is just silent on this point. And so the lease does provide that Monroe Park Conservancy is supposed to come up with use policies for the park, doesn't impose many requirements about what those use policies should say. And so it's very important that when those use policies are developed, that we all examine them carefully to make sure that First Amendment rights will be observed.
And what are some of the specific questions that you have addressed to the city attorney in your letter? I believe the letter was sent to the city attorney back middle of May, May the 15th.
So we pointed out to the city attorney that the lease doesn't make clear exactly how existing city laws and policies about public park are going to be implemented, whether they're really going to be implemented at all. The lease leaves open the question of whether Monroe Park Conservancy is indeed going to be treated as a state actor for First Amendment purposes. The lease doesn't explain who exactly is in charge of enforcing these use policies, and it's not clear what will happen to various types of speech that have traditionally gone on in Monroe Park, like rallies, like petitioning, like conversations among friends. None of that is spelled out in the lease, and so we've asked that those things be clarified.
And another thing that has happened in Monroe Park on a very regular basis is a weekly feeding of homeless people. Is that activity also considered covered by the free speech protections of the First Amendment?
Well, the answer to that question is not completely clear because the Supreme Court has not addressed a question like that. And many have made the argument either that feeding homeless people is a form of expression that is protected by the First Amendment, or that it's a form of religious exercise protected by the First Amendment and other laws that protect the free exercise of religion. Those arguments have had mixed results in the courts. But we certainly would argue that any kind of regulation that seeks to target homeless people or keep homeless people out of the park should be discouraged. The fact that the park has changed hands should not affect the ability of anyone, including homeless people and people who want to help homeless people, from using the park.
So would the ACLU of Virginia basically make the argument that if the park's been used in the past for a particular purpose, when it was essentially owned and operated by the city, that that purpose is essentially unaffected by the fact that the city still owns it, but has leased it for 30 years to be operated by this Monroe Park Conservancy?
Yes. I mean, certainly the rules can change as long as the rules continue to comply with the First Amendment. But I think that all parties should bear in mind that this does continue to be a public park, and it is there for the use of all Richmonders.
Okay. So this letter went out to the city attorney in the middle of May. Have we received any type of a response from the city attorney?
We did receive a letter from the city attorney's office indicating that they would certainly be examining the use policies and that they would keep our concerns in mind. So far, we haven't seen Monroe Park Conservancy's use policies, and I don't know whether, in fact, they've already been developed or not.
Because they are essentially a government actor, a state action, would they be required to develop those policies in an open public manner? Would they be subject to, for example, the Freedom of Information Act?
Well, Not necessarily. However, as it turns out, the city council passed a separate ordinance that requires Monroe Park Conservancy to submit the use policies to them and to give them 30 days to review it, and they can veto those use policies if they want to. So we certainly hope that in undergoing those deliberations, the city council will make those use policies broadly available by posting it on its website and distributing it as broadly as possible so that members of the public can give input about them.
And is City Council required to notify the public that they received these use policies from Monroe Park Conservancy, or is this something that the public needs to sort of keep monitoring City Council and checking the City Council's website and checking even City Council agendas to see what it is they're considering?
I don't think there's anything specifically in the resolution that requires that kind of public notice. So yes, citizens should monitor very carefully and should call their city council people to find out exactly what the status is of these use policies.
And this 30-year lease with the Monroe Park Conservancy, I mean, is it in effect now, or is this something that's going to take effect in a couple of months? What is the current status of Monroe Park?
The lease has been signed, and my understanding is that it's currently in effect. And so until those use policies are developed, it's actually not very clear, to me at least, what rules are governing the park. So we are keeping our eyes and ears open for any kind of free speech violations that might go on in the park. We want to make sure that during this interim period, people's First Amendment rights are respected.
And so right now, I mean, as we speak in July, someone who wants to hold a rally or do some type of free speech activity wouldn't even know whom to approach, whether it would be Monroe Park Conservancy, whether it would be some city department. Am I correct about that?
I believe you are correct. It could be that I'm missing something, but as far as I can tell, there's no clear policy about where one should go to get a permit or to make sure that such a rally is authorized. It would certainly suggest that people contact the Parks Department and see what they have to say about it.
And finally, if there's a member of the public who believes that his or her free speech rights or rights to access a public forum for purposes of assembly or some other constitutionally protected right has been infringed either by the city or by the Monroe Park Conservancy, whom should they contact?
They should contact us, of course, and we can be reached on our website, acluva.org, which has an online intake form. Our email address is intake@acluva.org, and our phone number is 804-644-8022. And of course, we also would like to hear from you by mail if that's the best way for you to communicate. We'd be happy to receive your letters, your emails, or your online intake forms.
Well, very good. Well, thank you so much. We have been speaking with American Civil Liberties Union of Virginia attorney Rebecca Glenberg about the constitutional right to free speech as it applies to a public forum, and also how that relates to the current Monroe Park Conservancy, which has a lease on Monroe Park for the next 30 years and will be developing policies which we hope will be in compliance with the Constitution. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you. My pleasure.
That's all for this week's Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. This show is heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. The show is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. To see if you can get free civil legal aid, call during intake hours. These are Monday through Thursday, 9 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. and 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. The phone number is 200-6046 for intake, 648-1012 for the main number, and 1-800-868-1012 to call toll-free. You can get free legal information at the statewide legal aid website. This is www.valegalaid.org. You also may get free pre-recorded legal information by phone during non-business hours. These are before 9 a.m., after 5 p.m., and on weekends and legal holidays. Call toll-free 1-866-534-5243. If you have any comments on the show, you can email them to marty@cvlas.org. In addition, every first-run Central Virginia Legal Aid radio show ever broadcast is available at www.radioforall.net. That's radio, the numeral 4, all.net. Then click the contributor link, then click Marty Wegbright, Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. This show provides only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford one, call Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. Removing mold safely and effectively, especially in rental housing, is not as easy as you might think. Join us next week when professional mold remediator Craig Duncan gives expert inside advice about what mold is, when you may be at risk, and what to do about it in a rebroadcast of a show originally heard on February 20th, 2013. That's law for the rest of us next week on the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. I'm Marty Wegbright.